Which on the one hand, of course, it's why money's so dangerous. Why we're so susceptible to idolatry with money. But it's also why money is one of the best resources we have to lean into who we were created to be. Yeah, we can use money to think that we can replace God because it can make us feel like we are God. But we can also use money to imitate God, to follow Him, to be like Him, which is what we were called to do. And even though those two paths are starkly different, you know, try to be God or try to be like God, try to follow Him, try to be our own God, understanding our money as a gift from God, seeing that there's these two different paths and saying, okay, yeah, I want money to be a gift from God so I can follow God, that's not just an idea that we can agree is true and it magically becomes so in our life. That's not how it works. To truly believe that or to want to believe that, it has to be a faith practice because it's a decision to be obedient in the one area of life where there's no pressure to be obedient. To understand that money is a gift from God, the avenue to do that is to say, I am going to be obedient to God in the one place where there's no pressure to be obedient. Because I can do whatever I want with it. And we know that this is hard, and therefore, as a church, we think, you know, taking the time to reorient our perspective on money and to invite people to go towards the truth that it's a gift from God, that is the first step to letting the Spirit move. We want to provide opportunities to claim or to reclaim a better way than scarcity when it comes to our finances. We want to do that in as many ways as possible. It's why we're doing a pledge card so that you can actually be intentional and discern your giving. This doesn't happen organically, and so we know that. We want, if money is a gift from God and therefore it's a gift for all of us, we want to understand in as many ways as possible how money can be communal. That's part of the equipping fund that we have, where we gather together to be sent out to join where God's at work in the world. We want our faith community to be in the business of helping each other open our hands around the ways that we clutch money tightly. And that's what we're going to do today. First, by looking at this parable of the talents, and then by actually inviting you to live the parable. And we're going to do that in some real ways. But let's recap the parable Shondor read first. It basically goes like this, you know, a man, master, he's heading out of town. He's going on a journey that will take him away for a long time. And so he entrusts different amounts of his wealth to different slaves. He gives one of them, five bags of gold, and one of them two bags of gold, and another one bag of gold. And I just want to, that's the beginning of the story. And so I right there, I already think there's a little bit to unpack. And so I want to make three quick points so we can kind of gather around this parable. And the first one is this. If we're to understand that the man, the master, is Jesus, which I think he is, then this parable should remind us when we claim Jesus as Lord, we submit our whole lives to his authority. Submit our whole lives to his authority, including our money. I truly believe that Jesus uses these terms, which kind of shock us now, these terms like master and slave. He's not endorsing some sort of evil institution, but he's reminding us that the only way we're going to give up the best tool we have to be our own God and to use it in the service of Jesus is to remember that we're not our own master. Money. Let you think you can be your own God. And I don't care how good of a person you are. The only way you're giving that up is if you claim somebody else or something else is your master. I think that language is there for a reason. And so secondly, the parable makes the second point clear. And this parable says that the bags of gold are important to the master, to Jesus. Money is not evil in this parable. It's of God, and it's from God, and it's for God. If, you know, we should engage it carefully, knowing what a temptation it is, but we have no need to avoid it. God gives it to us. Gives it to us. Our call is not to dismiss it or to not care about it, but it's to be good stewards of it. That's point number two. And so then point number three. This is obvious. Don't have to go to seminary to get this one. People get different amounts of money. I just want to say it out loud. People get different amounts of money. That happens in the parable. There's nothing fair about the distribution. However, and I think this is important, there is an equity of call in this parable. All three are given the same mission, and there's no hint that one is more vital than the other. It's not to say, well, really, you know, we're giving it to the one because we don't want you to feel bad, but really, if the guy who has five comes through strong, then we're good to go. No, it's each one is equally important to be entrusted with this money. And we so often say, you know, we think, well, when I get to this level of security or when I can really make an impact, then I'll begin to discern what to do with my finances. Then I'll start to get intentional. When I get through this season, when I have all of these fixed places I got to spend money, then I'll be focused on what to do. But Jesus, he makes it clear, you can use only what we have been given, and you're expected to use it. You don't get to excuse the fact that you have less or you have more or whatever. This is the mission, and everyone's got it, and everyone's important for it. And so then the parable does continue, and it says, and so the master, he goes away, and the first two servants, they get to work. They invest. They double their money quickly, like really quickly. Like, it makes you think they should have done more than double their money. It's just super easy for them, but that's what they do. And then the third guy, well, he breaks out in hives. He has a total freak out after the master leaves. And he buries his gold. And he spends the next couple years anxiously sweating and biting his nails and nervous he's going to forget where he hid his money. And so then the master, he comes back. And the first two servants are excited. They're excited to tell the story, and they're excited to be with Jesus again or the master. And they say, man, I doubled up. And the master is excited and says, come and experience more of this happiness. He gives them more to do. But then the third guy says, I was too worried I was going to screw up. I know you have high expectations, so I played it safe. Basically, since I know you're actually counting on what you gave me for your harvest, I didn't want to lose it. So he says, I know that you actually reap where you didn't sow. And so I knew you were going to use this money, and I didn't want it to go to zero, so I just didn't do anything with it. And the master, he hears this, and he's not only disappointed. He takes the money that the man didn't lose, and he gives it to someone else, and he throws the third man into darkness, where we have the lovely phrase, where there was great weeping and gnashing of teeth. Basically, this parable ends with what I think is the first recorded instance of, if you want to cry, I'll give you something to cry about. That's what the master says. Oh, you were really worried? I'll give you something to worry about. Tosses him out. That's what happens. And it's harsh. It's harsh language, and we'll get to that. But I wanna just give two more really quick points just to break down the parable until we get to the main gig. And that's this. I think this parable, it makes clear, when we are faithful, if you are faithful with your money, there will be a positive return. But there is no differentiation of praise and reward based on how positive that return is. Jesus doesn't tell this story so we feel driven to be the most accomplished with our money, that we can kind of show the big thing that we were able to do. That's not to say that we don't care about the results, that you should just say, like, well, money's not important, so I'll just throw it out on the street and I'll assume that it does good. That's not what he's saying either, that you know, we don't give to nonprofits that we know are going to fail. It's not faithful to enable an addict because you want to help them out financially. It's not to say that we shouldn't invest our money without prayer, or we don't need to educate ourselves about what wise kingdom investment is. That's not what it's saying. But what I mean is, there's one way that people are differentiated in this parable. There's one difference between the first two guys and the third guy. And that is that if people really believe the good news, that they've been invited to be like God with money that isn't theirs, that they will be faithful and they will invest, and that the other people, the third person, is not able to do that. This is the one thing that the master asks. He says, use my wealth like I would. He hopes the servants understand and will follow through on the vision of the master, that they sense that these talents have been entrusted to them for a reason, that they're a part of the master's plan. And the first two servants, they see that call as the gift that it is, as a grace-filled invitation that they've been invited to live a new life of Jesus and for Jesus, and they're excited to do it. There's no fear or concern. But the third person sees this call as an obligation. Think about how often giving can feel like an obligation. It's his obligation that he's got to fit into his old life, and he don't want to screw it up. Because an expectation to live like Jesus in our old mindset of scarcity, to try to do the work of Jesus without living into the world of Jesus, it's always too much. And that's the difference between them. It's not how much they produce. It's how much they trust. And it leaves the third man paralyzed with anxiety. To use another parable to kind of sum it up, the first two people realize that they get to plant a mustard seed and rejoice about how God grows it into a huge tree. While the third person sees his mustard seed and feels pressure to will a bag of gold into a tree. That's the difference. In a very real way, God has given these men a piece of heaven, and the third servant responds by saying, I'd rather live in fear. And so as best I can tell, the punishment the master hands down is really just an affirmation of where the man has already decided to live. After all, when the master takes the money the servant was doing nothing with, I mean, think about what the punishment is. The master takes the money. That's the first punishment. He takes the money that the guy was already doing nothing with, and he places him in a place of anxiety. How is that any different than what the third man was already living in? It's not different. We just don't want judgment in our life. Unfortunately, it happens to be there, but it is an affirmation of what is already doing. It is a push into it. That's where he already was. The servant didn't lose anything. The master just confirmed that is where he was going to live. All right, one final point. And I'm just trying to give you these sort of points to give you thoughts and frames. And we'll get to a little thesis here at the end. But one final thought, and I think it's important. Anytime you talk about judgment, I think this is important, especially if you're like, oh, I kind of feel like the third guy. I don't think that this is a moral issue in this parable. It's not that the first two people are good and the third person is bad. You know, sin, it has moral implications. But sin, it's not solely about morality. If it was, we could see money as a gift as easily as we could see murder as bad, and that's just not the case. No, this parable is saying if our life is facing the wrong direction, if we just can't seem to lean into the fact that our money is a gift from God, if we are disordered, we will be a people who are convinced we are acting responsible, but in reality, we are on a path of weeping and gnashing of teeth. It's far greater than morality. It's not stop doing this and start doing this. It's turn around and live in a new way because we're missing out on joy. And so what I hope we begin to see this morning is we have each been entrusted with these resources by the God of the universe. And what I wanted to do is just sort of be able to frame what it is and what it isn't so we can begin to look at what our resources look like. That we're not waiting to encounter this parable. You are not waiting to encounter this parable. You are living this parable right now. Our money is a gift from God, and the one thing that Jesus has asked is that while he is gone, we use it, we invest it, we spend it like he would. It's to believe that by the grace of Jesus Christ, God is counting on my life to harvest things for eternity. Let me say that again. This is what the parable says. He says, I am counting on you. The way you spend money, the way you give money, I am counting on you to harvest these things for eternity. And I know that's not easy to believe, let alone live into, but we want to encourage you toward it. Help you see that it's really true. It's a lifetime journey, but we at least want to be journeying. And so this morning, we're going to actually entrust bags of gold to a couple of you. And I mean that literally. We're going to hand out envelopes of money to you. That's what we're going to do. And we've broken them up just like the parable into different amounts, and some of you are going to randomly be given funds, and some of you will have a chance to volunteer and take one. Real money. And on the one hand, I think there's probably people who would be in two different groups here. On the one hand, this could feel scandalous, right? It could feel like, wait, you're just handing out money with no strings attached? Like, so many things could go wrong, right? This could be horrible. Is this the money that I just gave last week because I didn't want? And it is. Yeah. It could be scandalous. It can feel too risky. It's like, shouldn't we leave investing money to others who kind of have more knowledge of what to do with it? And if those are your thoughts, you're catching a glimpse of how generous and risky and scandalous the grace of God is. It's literally what the parable says. I'm giving you this thing that you did not earn, and I'm counting on you. I'm inviting you to start to build eternity. And hopefully, you're beginning to see why it's actually so necessary to do every once in a while. It's kind of like to wake us up, because here's the deal. Nearly everyone in this room has been given more money than we're about to hand out. You're like, oh my gosh, you're about to give somebody like $100? Like, what if they don't use it right or whatever? Do you have more than $100 in your bank account? Are you worried about yourself? Where you're going to, spend that or give that? It sort of wakes us up to say, man, this call already exists in my life. Maybe I should be a little more intentional. And so one of our prayers in this is that it helps us to begin to see the money we pass out here is no more a gift from God than our paycheck. We should see them the same. They are entrusted to our care, and they are seeds for the trees of eternity. And then on the other side, I think the other reaction you could have is like, wow, this is a great idea. I'm excited about this. I really hope I'm not one of the random people who gets the gift. That's going to freak me out. If you're nervous because you don't know what you do with it, or you're afraid it wouldn't make a big enough impact, or people are going to judge you, or your story's not going to be cool enough, or something like that, I hope you hear this morning, as a child of God, you are worthy of this call. You're worthy of it. I don't get why I'm worthy of it, but I am. I have been given these things I did not deserve, and God says, you're worthy of it. Lean into it. And so whether you get the envelope or not, I want you to know you're worthy of this call. The only way to fail is to not embrace who you were created to be. To give money away, to check a box, or to relieve our guilt, you know, to use money to boost our own ego. Yes, those things are not the way. If we bury money like that, and it God will not be happy, it is not good. But I pray that you hear this morning the only requirement for us with our finances and with the gifts we're about to give is to trust the good news. To pray and to discern and to invest where our God is at work in the world. And so I'm going to invite Joe up here in a second. And he's going to give a little more detail. And then we're going to pass out bags of gold. And we're excited to see it as a currency of the kingdom. See it as a currency of the kingdom. And we're going to invite you to be like Jesus with it, to be like God, to invest with kingdom assets. And so that together, when we tell stories of where the money went, we will rejoice together that our God is on the move and we actually had the chance to invest in eternity, that our church is building up the kingdom of God alongside God, that we are leaning into our call. How cool is that? And that is our opportunity with everything that we have. And so whether you get it or not, I hope this just kind of instigates, spurs a little bit of dreaming, a little bit of creativity, because that's who God is. That's who we want to be as we follow him. So I'm going to invite up Joe. I'm going to let him do the fun part. I did the boring Bible study. Now Joe's going to sling money around. That's just the servant leader that I am. But I invite Joe up. He'll flesh it out, and then we'll get to work.